Welcome everybody. Thank you for listening to Tools for Life, the Tint podcast. In this episode, I will be interviewing Tint's very own new life coach, Marja Ernst. Marja recently joined our team, which is why we wanted to introduce her to you by talking a bit about her life, her passions and experiences. Another important topic of today is the choices you make now. How do they influence the future? How permanent is the path you choose today? Should you already have your future planned out? Marja will take us along with these difficult questions, speaking from a lot of experience. All info and contacts shared during our conversation can be found in the show notes. Are you ready to come along? So thank you all for listening to Tools for Life, the Tint podcast. I'm sitting here with Marja. Welcome, Marja. Could you maybe introduce yourself real quick to the audience?
No, thank you, Casper. Thank you for inviting me here today. I'm Marja. I work as a life coach at Tint from this January on now. My background is quite broad. I think we'll come to that a bit later, but I studied here at TUE, Mechanical Engineering, and at the same time Innovation Studies. It was thema at the moment, at that moment, Technica Maatschappij.
All right.
And I did my PhD here, and I again other masters 10 years later. Yeah, and now I'm here as a life coach.
Kind of back to the roots in that sense.
Yes,
but exactly. In a completely different way than before then.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I think we're going to come back to that because that's of course very interesting to talk a little bit about.
Yeah.
But first, what brought you back here? Why did you join Tint?
Now, actually, when I was studying here, I already knew Tint. It was called differently at that moment. But I did all the workshops they gave, and I really, a bit of fear of missing out, that you think, oh, there is another workshop, I want to follow that one too. And I think that's the moment that the small flame was already there to go in Tint direction.
The seed was already planted back then, yeah, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because do you remember what you saw of it back then? Something specific?
I used to follow all the Enneagram workshops.
Okay.
About types of human beings, and they were always in the
monastery.
In Gemert. So then it was always a weekend with a sleepover and a very nice atmosphere, and yeah, for me that really. That was something that you did workshops on exploring who you are and how life works.
Yeah, that seems very interesting. Also as a student to go out with a group.
Yeah.
Because how was your study time here at TUE like? What did you remember the most? What is something that you took with you?
Oh, that's a nice question. Yeah, of course, I it was a choice to do two studies at one time.
I can imagine,
Actually, they always promised me I could do one big thesis in the end, so no two theses, that shouldn't be necessary. But in the end, when it came to the subject and the choice of what to do, it turned out to be that it was not, that we couldn't combine, so I had to do two theses in the end.
That seems impossible to me.
It was quite demotivating. But at that moment, I said, I will never do two studies at once again. And what did I do? 10 years later, I studied religion studies in Tilburg at the university. And I did in Nijmegen. I studied the spiritual guidance Nijmegen. Yeah.
So you also decided to do those two at the same time.
Yeah. And at that moment, I thought, I promised myself not to do this again. But okay. So that's maybe me.
And you also added the factor of two different cities to the equation.
Yeah. And I lived in Maastricht at that moment.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was quite a thing. Yeah.
Wow, I can imagine. Yeah. So you knew Tint from your study time already. Why did you come back?
did I come back? Actually, maybe at the moment I chose to do religion studies, I always thought I want to do something tint-like. And we live in Rosmalen now at the moment, so all of a sudden, hey, there was that, it's maybe not too far from Eindhoven, maybe I can. And then an old colleague of mine, he knew Margit, and he said, yeah, I think there will be an opportunity for you anytime soon. So yeah, that was the trigger to do so. Yeah.
And now you're a life coach, of course. What is life coaching exactly for those who don't know what it is exactly?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Of course, it's coaching, but there are many different coaches, some kind of coaches, and you can say, you can talk about facts only or talk about emotions, and that's more a psychologist, but you can also talk about values and the big questions in life, more existential, and that's life coaching. I always feel like I go part of the path of someone with them. So I'm not changing the path, I'm not judging the path, I just walk with you. And yeah.
Bit of guidance with the big questions.
Yeah, and we think together. And sometimes I think it's maybe most powerful that you hear yourself telling your own story again. And yeah, by telling the story, you learn something about yourself again in a new way, in a new...
A new perspective, maybe.
New perspective, that was the word I was searching. Yes, in a new perspective, yeah.
What kind of questions could that be that someone is stuck with?
It can be anything, but I see that a lot of things come down to choices, that you have to make choices in your life, and yeah, some explicitly, some you just do, and then see, ooh, I made a choice if I walking that direction. I think it's always the question, what do you believe in, actually, in life coaching? How did you think, where do you go? Where do you have those sparkling in your eyes? Where, what do you love? What do you... Yeah. That's the...
And it's also a process of finding that out for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
It's actually quite wonderful. To connect that to you, what would your drive in life be? What's the thing that energizes you the most?
Yeah, let's think about that. My drive in life, I think, and you can see that from the diversity that I did with studying, I think learning and exploring something new, something, I think that's the drive. And also to explore with others what they are exploring and doing and being curious. Yeah.
So as well for yourself as helping others with their path.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
So would you say that you're any good at it at this point with finding it out for yourself and for others as well? Just a little bit of promotion for you.
No, I think, maybe I'm good at studying myself, but something like that. At least finding new studies, because you have to stop budget. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah.
So I found out that it doesn't matter how many studies you did already, only if you're 18 years and older, you can apply for the stop budget. So yeah, of course, I did.
It wasn't even something you had to consider. You just had to do that.
No, I wanted to try it, how it works. Then when I recommend others to do it, that I knew how to. And yeah, actually, there were quite some courses that I thought, maybe that's nice.
So, okay.
Yeah.
What was the course that you took from that?
Vertrouwenspersoon. I'm not sure how do you call that.
A confidential counselor, maybe?
A confidential counselor. Yes, yes. Huh? I think you're right.
Yeah. I can see that suits the role of a life coach also pretty well.
Yeah, yeah. That was a nice addition, I think. So, yeah.
Well, then to look a bit at the changing career of you and your, the life path you took. To check what led you here, what are your previous experiences you have had?
What led me here to the life coach being?
Yeah, that's exactly. What did you do in the past? And
yeah. Yeah, that's quite a nice story, because for other people it seems quite a sudden change, huh, in life path. But for me it was quite gradual. So after my PhD, I did a postdoc 1 year. And during that time, I thought, during my PhD already a lot of courses with the teacher trainers at the TOE. But they were all psychologists. But I tried. I saw a vacancy at their unit and I applied, and they, yeah, I got accepted there. So I worked for, I think, 3 even more years as a teacher trainer at TUE in a team of all psychologists and me as the only technical person there.
Right.
But it was very nice. I really liked it. And at that moment, I realized that when I did coaching of the teachers, that it should be about education, about their education. They doing education, their lectures and things. But I was more interested in the teacher himself. That you think what is behind his choices to do this, and how does he see his future? And yeah, so after a lot of my coaching sessions, it was like, it was nice, but maybe we should have talked about education more, or yeah.
How did you find that out, that was more of your interest?
Yeah, I felt it, that each when each session goes a different direction than it should be, officially should be, then you think, hey, maybe there is something more I want to do. And in that time I found some flyers somewhere, really on simply on some random occasion, actually. I thought, oh, religion studies? So like, yeah, maybe that's nice. And I had to think about that quite hard, because I thought, yeah, I can't do this. I'm fully
you already here. Did your studies, yeah, you're at this point already,
and that's not that's no option, but yeah, after I think 1 year of thinking, shall I and also the personal situation at that moment was also a bit changing, so I thought, yeah, maybe if I want to do it, I do it now. So
right,
that's
making choices.
making choices.
So then religion studies, how long is that ago now?
Already 15 years, yeah.
So what came after that?
Yeah, what came after that? Yeah, that was quite interesting, because I started studying again when I was 32.
Yeah.
And then you want to have an income. And the problem was, I did religion studies, but I'm a Catholic. And the Catholic Church says you can't work as a, I think it's called spiritual caretaker, geestelijk verzorger. You can't work with an approval of the church when you studied religion studies. You should study theology. And they were really strict on that. So I was so disappointed. I did 2 years of a master, and it was had the accreditation to be a spiritual caretaker. And now then they said, no, it's simply not possible. But I was lucky. I found a job during my theology study, which I had to do after the religion studies because of that thing. But I could, I found a job, and there was my boss. He said, "You can do the study, and you're not qualified yet, but you can already start." And it was quite nice. And there you see my, that the TUI helped also, because there were many applicants for the job as a spiritual caretaker in an elderly home.
Right.
And he chose me because he said, yeah, you have the technical background. And it was an elderly home in Bloemendaal. And there are a lot of engineers here. They are 90 years old. And they will like this a lot. A real engineer as their spiritual caretaker. And yeah, that
some real subjects to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I can imagine, yeah. And did the conversations involve a lot of engineering topics?
Yeah, no, sometimes it depends on the person, and of course also on... I had two sections in the house. There were one only somatic patients, and also a closed part.
What does that mean, somatic patients?
Somatic is only that they have a physical... physical help. They need physical help. That's okay. Why they are there.
Yeah.
And you have the other closed section, and that is for example, Alzheimer patients.
Right. Yeah. So you did a bit of the both counseling with them.
Yeah, exactly.
So your life path is not necessarily coherent and straight, although it does involve some of the same topics. It went in various directions, of course. Is that something that's good or bad necessarily?
Yeah, I think maybe we, in some way we come back to what we said earlier. For me, when I look at it from a more general perspective, I think it's quite coherent. For me, it's coherent, but for you, it feels like it goes everywhere.
Right.
Yeah, but I think it's all about life. You have mechanical things, and that's about, maybe more facts and, things that are tangible. You say, so this is a mechanical thing.
Right. The beta side of things.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, my innovation studies was already a bit the connection of psychology and the technical part. And now, you have that whole vision of the whole whole life.
So it's all part of the same story in that sense.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Yes. And that's nice, because I feel like that, but for others it doesn't seem to be. So I get this question a lot, that people say, wow, okay, you left the real stuff and now you're doing this.
That sounds quite opinionated.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it depends on who you talk to. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. Is that hard sometimes?
That's quite interesting. I think I'm from the generation of Thea Studeer Techniek. I don't know, that's long ago. They had a campaign about women to engage them to do engineering studies.
Right.
And if you could do it, you should do it. And I think when you compare myself and my brother, he is 3 years younger, and he did mechanical engineering here in Eindhoven too. And I always tell people he was born with a screwdriver in his pocket. That's
His passion.
His passion, his everything. He has an old sports car, and he completely deassembled it, and then made it as one again, and splendid, and he won prizes with it. And that's my brother. I'm very proud of him. And but me, that was different. I chose to do this, and actually I first came to Eindhoven for innovation studies, because I thought the combination of both is quite nice.
Yeah.
But I chose, I thought I do environmental. The you had several options to do your master in, and I thought, yeah, the environmental master sounded good. So that was the combination with chemical technology. And all summer, I chose to do it. And the summer before I started, I said, who would have thought in high school that I would do chemical engineering? That's
right.
Really, yeah. Exactly. So I went, and my first one of the first subjects I followed was thermodynamics, and there was some the teacher, and he said, yeah, when you are really a chemical engineer, then you like these subjects, and when you are for this, then you're of course not here, you are at mechanical engineering.
Right.
And I thought, oh no, yeah, I'm here.
Those were the things that I wanted to do, yeah.
Yeah, and I took, at that moment, I went to the advisor and I said, yeah, really, is it possible to combine mechanical engineering and innovation studies, because that was not existing as such.
They didn't offer that.
Didn't offer that. So I asked him, can I try that I combine it, or that we puzzle on it? And he agreed. So that's the moment I started, and I switched to mechanical engineering, and then I realized, as a woman and mechanical engineering only doing half of the technical curriculum, I thought, that's will people take me seriously? So I decided to switch to my main study was mechanical engineering, and then I added innovation studies to it. So
all right,
yeah, but it was quite of a and then starting.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah,
yeah,
you had to change a couple of things to find your own path in that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, close to the heart, I think, and then it's then it works really better than when you say, I have to, this was the thing I planned, and I stick to that, and I don't want to, yeah.
Because that can be difficult to admit to yourself that the original plan is something that you want to divert from.
That is true.
How do you figure that out?
Yeah, I think you feel it. And the only thing is that that I see in life coaching a lot, that you just go because you have that plan and you think you should. And you keep going until you stand still and think, oh, what is it? What makes me sad or restless, or that you feel that you lose that flame that was there first, and now all of a sudden it isn't. So I think that's that you have an alert, so like,
ooh, right, yeah, yeah,
there
it's,
is something.
It's a symptom of
exactly.
Something being off.
Yeah.
And then how do you admit that to yourself? Because it can be hard to, I mean, I can see a lot of students around here at the TOE that say, maybe it wasn't my first choice study, or maybe in retrospect I should have picked something else. But then how do you admit to yourself that you actually want to make that change?
There, it's like a growth or something, that you first feel that there is something not right, and I see that when you have to voice it out, then it's to a point that it really gets somewhere, or that it gets real, and that you say, you feel it inside, and that point that it really comes out, then it gets real, and then you take action, or maybe not. I mean, there's always that choice that still that you think,
back to the choice.
It's too much, or
how can you figure out if you want to make that choice to change things up?
I think that depends a bit also on how big the change is. And it's sometimes people come to me and then they have an idea of that it's not good, but it's also on different levels. That you say in sometimes you can make it so big that change doesn't seem to ever. You can't change everything. But right. There are several smaller parts of that. Maybe you're not happy and maybe there is something and maybe we can figure out if changing one of the smaller parts of it already makes a big difference. Or, and of course, you have sometimes the feeling that it can't. It simply can't. You can't change it. And when you look better, then you think, maybe it's possible.
And maybe some aspects at least.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's dividing the choice up in smaller parts, actually, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's important that it's sometimes you feel overwhelmed that it's I'm completely in the wrong place or this is. Yeah. And of course, it is also a struggle that you. Sometimes you have to cope with something that you can't do the study you like because there is a stop on the admission or
So not everything is within possibilities every now and then.
Yeah,
that can also make it difficult to make that change, I think.
Yeah, that is, sometimes it's also the way you relate to it. And that what is a change? And you can be mad about it. Something happens and you say, I don't want it. And just simple, stay there in only that frustration and you don't do anything. I always think there is something you have that you can say I can change it, or you have to accept it. One of the two, and that makes it quite hard, I think, sometimes. That
it's either change everything or just cope.
Yeah, and what I tell the students that come to me, you have that span of control. You only yourself, you can do something about a certain space around you, and you don't have the control over the whole world. For example, with environmental problems, you can say, "Wow, this is so frustrating," or "So I want to make a change," but.
But as an individual, you don't have that much of an influence on those kinds of.
With environmental problems, you see that you don't have that influence, but with smaller. Things in your life, you sometimes have the feeling that you have that span of control, that you really can do something about things, but sometimes it isn't.
Can you give an example of that?
Let's take it a bit small, that you say you and the acceptance of your family around you, and you can have that you want to change the way they feel about your choice of study, for example.
Right.
But that's a bit of a...
You feel like you have to prove yourself, but it's not something you can do if they have their opinions.
Yeah, exactly. If they... So then you can think that you have to show or to convince or... Yeah.
That it's up to you to do that.
Yeah, that's up to you and all on your shoulders. And maybe that's not what should be. Yeah.
No, I can imagine. Because in what sense do the choices of people decide their future?
Good one. Yeah, in some sense, it of course does. Eh? I mean, the simple example, eh? When you choose not to do a STEM direction in your at high school,
right?
Yeah, you can't become a doctor. I think that's still the case, eh? That you should have biology and chemistry in your and that's of course a very obvious thing. And I think because what comes to my mind, that you say, does those choices make are so rigorous, that you say this is really
like, are they so permanent?
Yeah, exactly. Because I always my choice to do my PhD here or not, that was something that people were really worried, that they say you will be overqualified later when you want a job somewhere. Maybe you're overqualifying and they won't hire you. And that was really something that bothered me, that I thought, oh really, when I do this now, is that so impactful? And actually, when I look back now, I think no one said no, we can't hire you. I even worked at youth services, beleidsmedewerker,
policy
advisor, and actually it helped me a lot, my technical insight and things, and that was okay. But I checked later with them, did you maybe think I'm too qualified for this or overqualified? And they said no, we never thought about that. If you
So it was not as limiting as people made it out to be in the beginning.
No, exactly. Yeah.
So is it then not a waste to go into a field of your study that might not be of use later?
Yeah, that's a question I get a lot. That you don't do anything with mechanical engineering. And I think, is that true? I mean, for me, like I said, for the elderly home situation, that you are able to talk with people and relate in that sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the use of it comes back later in some other form most of the time, you say.
Yeah, for me, yes, that's so true. And it was quite nice. We lived in as an expat outside the Netherlands, and I wasn't allowed to work there also because we lived in Muslim countries. And I'm as a theologist, as I want to, if I would want to work as a theologist, that was of course not. Not possible at all.
That wouldn't fit in the society there.
Exactly. Yeah. So people said, why not again mechanical engineering? Then you can apply. You can. And I deep in my heart, I thought, no. I think for me, the technical study more felt like an
challenge.
A challenge, a challenge, and were nice puzzles. And I really loved studying this. And also my PhD, I chose for a PhD subject that was really practical. So I had a test installation and things. But I was very aware that I'm very more a theoretical person. So at the moment I accepted the project, I knew this was learning. Again, the learning, as I told in the beginning about my drive in life.
Yeah.
That's, That was for me 4 years. I will do that, and I just love it because I know I will learn a lot, and that's nice. And
so you really did it to just learn something new for yourself instead of prepare for some future.
No, exactly. Yes.
And you're happy with that?
I was very happy with that. Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, that worked. Yeah.
So that's still worth it in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Still, and yeah, really, I won't regret one of the choices of my studies. That's really, I would do it again. Yeah.
Did you back then already know that you wanted to do something else in the future?
No, not that. No, not that clear. I think I chose for innovation studies because it was the connection between technology and psychology and sociology. You know what I mean, I think. And I thought that would be my ideal work, that I ever get a job in that area. But along the way, I thought maybe that's not really what I want, but it's gradually changed. Yeah.
So would you say it's necessary to have your future planned out?
No, I would say when you see, you always have that. I think maybe it is important to have some kind of a horizon where you think you work to. Huh? But in more detailed,
So a general direction would be enough.
Yeah, a general direction, yeah. Yeah. And I think it's nice when you think of your life path as a straight line. Oh, it should be a straight line from
point A to point B. Yeah.
Exactly. And then you think, as an engineer, you think, okay, a line with 2 points, defined by 2 points. Then you have your birth and your death. And what a coincidence it would be if that would really stay a straight line, because there are more points on that line and they won't fit on that A to B, I think. So it's very okay if that doesn't.
So you can also be flexible with the future plans you have in place already.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And yeah, you see it, for example, with Corona, you could plan, but then, oops, everything was different. And
one of those environmental changes you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, for example, yeah.
So you never have everything under control anyways.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think we have to accept that. But that's sometimes it's quite hard to...
Because it can also sometimes lead to disappointment in retrospect. If someone changes their studies, for example, and they feel like their first choice was a wrong choice or something that they couldn't make for themselves, it can be hard to get over that.
Yeah. I always think disappointment is maybe more... like a signal or so, then you say, hey, I think of a kind of different sort of disappointment, because don't you think that someone makes the choice for another study and then it's conscious that you really think, I want to do that? Will it be a disappointment? Maybe it's a relief to finally be in the study you wanted. So for me, it would be a bit alarming if someone says, I'm still disappointed about leaving the other study. Then, I would ask questions at least.
Right.
What did you make that change? And is the change then not right or not fully okay? Or because I think normally disappointment can be a very positive thing, that you feel that if you're really disappointed about something, then it meant something to you, that there is something in that made you happy or made you sad because you miss it.
So it's a nudge in the right direction.
Yeah, maybe, yes. I see that in that way, that you, also can see it as a, sort of alert, like, hey, here is something that comes to close to my heart and it means something to me, so.
So you shouldn't always reject it, but sometimes listen to it a bit.
Yeah, listen to it a bit, at least with the right angle of view. I mean... sometimes things you can't have and that you're disappointed because you can't have it, or you missed the ticket for a concert and you're disappointed, and then I think it's okay to but you can also think, okay, I was apparently so passionate to go there, is there another option, or do they come somewhere else, or maybe a similar band, or yeah, something like that.
So I just trying to reshape that into a future choice, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes, yes, yeah.
So that's dealing with your own disappointment, or at least shaping it to something that you can use in life. Yeah. But then there's also sometimes other people who have an opinion about a change you make, for example, family or friends. How can you deal with those kinds of things?
Yeah, that's a nice question, I think, because that's true, what you say, that for yourself you can make it, or at least see some kind of gift in it, or deal with it. Let me think. Two things come to my mind. I think when I talk to students, I come back to that accept and change part, that you see the disappointment as a signal, and then you go and research what it is. Is it something you can change, or is it that it really can't be changed, or that it's simply gone, that you lose someone, or something like that. Then it is different. Then it's not a disappointment, then it's more than that. And then different things come up then. But when I think, it's the second thing, about my direct family, you said when it's the family having expectations, but I think about my, for example, my son. He is 11 years old and he has to choose a middelbare school, a high school.
Yeah.
And yeah, in our region, you're not sure if you get the one you want. So you have to make a top three, and then they have a kind of system, a computer determining where you will go. Yeah, and I felt maybe that touches me more, that he will be disappointed, than like a kid is a part of yourself or something, and you don't want him to be sad or and I think that's maybe the kind of disappointment that I think it's hard, most hard to handle. But yeah, for rational thinking coaches, yeah, then then I have solutions, but then
right, yeah,
it's just human, I think.
I can imagine. But maybe it's also related that the view of other people on your choices, that's also one of those environmental things that you can't directly influence.
Yeah, that it's out of your span of control.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So is it still possible to give that a place for yourself?
Yeah, I think I can give a nice example, because it has a nice ending. And sometimes it is that you need to see it over time, longer time, and then you see the effect that... At first, when I chose to come to Eindhoven and that I made that switch to mechanical engineering, my father said, "No, that's really not for you. You shouldn't do that. You're a woman." And and of course, he had the comparison with my brother, who is really an engineer already.
Right.
Although he didn't study yet, but he was so obvious.
Practically already the perfect example.
Yeah. And he saw the difference, of course, and he thought, "No, what will she be doing? She is..." And still, I thought, "I will prove you wrong. I can do this." So I did. And now, after all those years, yeah, he says, "I'm actually very proud of you that you did it and that you found your way in the end, that you just gave it that twist that it fits you. And still, you did the engineering study, but now you have it in such a way that it's okay."
So you managed to show that you can make it your own.
Yeah. And he accepted. So, and I mean, it took some time. But,
right. But in the end, if it fits you and it suits you, people will see that.
Yeah.
That's actually a wonderful thought.
Yeah, I think that's the best like this, yeah.
Well, I think that we're already talking for quite a bit. Maybe we can leave the audience with an important question. If you could be an animal for one day.
If I could be an animal for one day. Is that what you asked me?
Yeah.
Oh, an animal for one day. Oh, yeah, I think I would choose a dog. I'm really a dog lover. And I think I like the spontaneous and just don't have sorrow or second thoughts. You just are playful and happy.
A little more impulsiveness.
Yeah, exactly. Sense, yeah. Yes. Let go everything of your thoughts and just run after that ball or
sometimes
go.
Forget the choices in life for a day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's nice. So true. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining the interview. I think you give people something really nice to think about for themselves and try to relate that to their own stories.
Yeah, I hope it helps for people to hear that it all falls into the right places in the end. Yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you again for being here today.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Tools for Life, the TIN podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe to the TIN podcast and find more information about what TIN is up to on our website, tint-eindhoven.nl, or by following us on Facebook and Instagram. You can also check out our website if you are interested in life coaching by TIN, for example if you are stuck on a difficult question or a choice yourself. Feel free to reach out to us anytime. My name is Casper de Bruin, and I look forward to having you with us for the next episode.